Thank you very much, colleagues. While others are still settling inside, Mr. Ndleleni is alleging me that a list was emailed. So there's some delay. I think we must do an investigation of this ICT. But it seems that side is not arriving. So I'm going to allow the board chairperson to lead and introduce it. And then, thank you. I'm now familiar with the process. Over to you.
Well, good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Committee, Deputy Minister, colleagues. I'm not sure whether to allow our delegation to introduce themselves, starting off with board members.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Zodwa Mbele. I'm the independent board member of CENTEC and also the chairperson of the audit committee.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. My name is Tumo Mahapi, the CEO of CENTEC. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Ruzane Rasukinya. I'm the Chief Financial Officer.
Morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister. My name is Khanki Matabane. I'm the CEO of CENTEC.
Good morning, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister. My name is Monde Ndleleni from CENTEC, responsible for government relations within the Office of the CEO. Thank you.
Well, before I give to the CEO to deal with the details of the presentation, let me make a brief remarks on the highlights of the annual report. I must say, Chair, we have achieved once again the clean audit, second year in a row, thus indicate our commitment to clean administration, and secondly, we've been able to enhance shareholder value by achieving over 90% of our KPIs we agreed upon with the shareholder. We've been able to grow the shareholder equity to over 1 billion rand. And I must indicate all these achievements were not going to be possible had it not because of the oversight of this honorable committee, the guidance of by the minister and the deputy minister, as well as the collective approach we have adopted between us, the board, and the management. Without further ado, I would like to give to the CEO to take us through the annual report details.
Okay, thank you. Go to the second page of the presentation. We'll go through a summarized version, noting that the annual report itself has been reviewed. A bit of business review, operational review, which will be done by the our COO, sustainability report, and the annual financial statements, which will be done by our CFO, if you don't mind. Next page, the chairperson has already mentioned, we are able to achieve over 90% of our predetermined objectives, and the one particular target, and that is 10 out of 11 targets that we set ourselves. The one target that we are not able to achieve is the full completion of the migration of our current network to digital. Must stress that that does not put the June 2015 deadline at risk, because we will be complete with all the sites, certainly within this financial year. All the sites will be done in this calendar year, with the potential exception of about two. One in Clifton here, where we have been having quite extensive discussions with the local government about putting the right infrastructure and not disturbing the look and feel of the environment, and that's been a discussion that's going on for the last 3 years, and we'll finally come up with a solution that we think can appeal to the residents of Clifton, and let us continue. The other one is in the Eastern Cape, where we just at the there we may actually meet the deadline in this current financial year. Then the issue there is really the getting the power to the sites quickly from Eskom and Telkom TFMC. But having said that, that target of DTT was not met, but that does not jeopardize the June 2015 deadline at all. As the chairperson has already mentioned, we were reviewed by the external auditors through the AG, and they clarified with us that they had received unmodified they passed an unmodified opinion on our financial statements. They made no material findings on predetermined objectives, and they also made no material findings on compliance within laws and regulations. I must state that the annual report does state that there are continuing investigations on matters. That's an ongoing problem. At any point in time, the auditors will ask us about the investigations that we're making and determine the extent to which we have covered them. But we agree that to the extent that things happen on a yearly basis, they do put that line in. And we did ask them at the AGM whether this qualifies as a clean audit, and they did say, I must say that behind the what seems like a calm surface, there is a lot of work that has been done by the company at all levels, at a shareholder level, at a board level, board committee levels, and also at executive management level to make sure that whatever we've been doing over the last 2 years in particular continues. The auditors found, agreed with the board and the audit committee, that the company is low liquid and is a going concern, at least into the medium term of 18 to 24 months, has a healthy balance sheet, and this will be further explained in the financial section. Through Chair, Honourable Chairperson, if I can have the COO then take us through the operational review as captured in pages 4 and 5 of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, CEO. As the CEO has indicated, we have achieved the period under the review, 82.13% population coverage, which equates to 45.43% geographical coverage. Maybe just to give the committee a sense of what we had to do to migrate from 0% to 84%. To migrate from 0 to 60%, we had to work around 47 sites. And then to move from 60% to 80%, we had to migrate on top of the 47 sites to migrate 67 sites. And then to move from 80% to 84%, we had to migrate on top of the 47 and 67 sites, 64 extra sites. And these sites are remote sites, which make them even more difficult to complete on time. Just to give an example on the complexities of the work that had to be done, we advertised a tender, invited potential participants. We went to Beggarsford with them to go and see the site. Most of these contractors are only used to doing like 50 meters size for cell phone companies, for example. When they got there, they saw 200 meters size. The next time when we requested a meeting with them, they never pitched. So it shows the complexity of the issues we had to deal with. So that's what one of the methods, of course, the delay. There's been some of the, like Beggarsford again, there's been some community challenges where community felt that they were not consulted enough, and then we were able to, with the department, we were able to resolve those matters. So at the end of the period under review, we completed 154 sites out of 178 which means that if we had to switch off, perhaps we can consider starting with the Free State, and because that is complete, the entire province was covered. We also, in the corporate plan, committed that we're going to cover 100% or the remainder of the 100% minus 84% cover that by the satellite. We were able to complete that in September, which means that 100% of the country is covered. If, for example, you come here, you have a set-top box, a TV, and a dish, you will be able to receive, for example, the 24-hour news channel of SABC for free. So we've covered that. The whole country is covered as far as that is concerned. We also committed to submit the broadcasting signal distribution master plan to the SIP steering committee that was completed successfully. We also then, as related to the coverage by DTH, we launched in September the DTH platform. We also then plan to obtain 5 customers for the multi-channel content distribution. We achieved that one as well, with over 60% achievement on the target. Part of what we were mandated to do is to ensure universal access connectivity to public institutions. We worked with various institutions, including the schools, clinics, and so on. And in the year under review, we had a target of 50, and then we achieved 137, which were made by of mainly USASA and the Central Lake side, which are all over the country. The USASA side are all over the country. Central Lake side are in the state. We also had a target for network availability. Network availability means the number of times when the service is on. This is just an average. We had the analog TV, for example, where we achieved 99.87%. FM radio achieved 99.87%. Shortwave, we achieved 99.86%. VSAT, 99.84%. Satellite 99.97. So the 99.86% is a weighted average. So we take all the services and the availability, and then we allocate it according to the revenue that is bringing, because that also gives you an indication of the impact. For example, if analog TV goes off, the impact is high compared to the shortwave. We achieved 99.86% as compared to 99.8% target. The customer satisfaction is very, very important. We conducted 2 surveys the last financial year, and part of the questions that we are asking were, for example, what is your perception about the Centec and service delivered by Centec? How do you find Centec? Is it friendly to you? Do you think Centec has got enough technical skills? So we improved that from 62% to 87%. We improved by more than 20%, which means which indicates that our customers are relatively happy with the service that we're providing. The organizations deliver through people, so it's important that employees are engaged. As part of that, also we need to measure that and then see whether the employees are happy or unhappy. The year under review, we achieved an improvement also there of 2%, which indicates that we still have a lot of work to do to make sure that at least the improvement goes further than that. We also implemented the performance management, because it's important that we assess the performance of the company, we assess the performance of the employees to ensure that we keep on improving. We can only make sure that we measure the level by assessing each employee's ability. So we've signed performance contracts for all the executive directors, which is the three of us here, the executives, and then all the heads. So we have achieved that one as well. Rona, we had targeted to achieve 10%, and we have achieved 15.4%. We also provided the services for CHAN, which is Championship of African Nations, which was held from 11 to the 1st of September, 11th January to 1st of September 2014. We provided the we provided coverage, global coverage for the CHAN successfully. So we also provided the services for the funeral of the former president Nelson Mandela, and we did this successfully as well. Honorable Chairperson, I'll hand over back to the CEO.
Thank you. Chairperson, on page 6, we cover a number of matters that fall under the sustainability part of the annual report. On corporate governance, we continue to strengthen that angle. We're able to strengthen in particular our company secretariat area, and that has allowed us to, in particular, strengthen the workings of the board and its committees, and also the liaison with the shareholder on oversight matters. HR, a long time ago, we started a journey of HR transformation. And in the last financial year, most of the effort was on talent management and also on performance management. And unfortunately, the company had not had a performance management for since it started. And it was the early part, the first implementation of that. And that went through the entire management team. On CSI, we continued implementing our typical program is provision of internet connectivity using VSAT, which will typically target schools in rural areas where there is no terrestrial kind of coverage. We typically do 14 such installations, and in most cases where, and in almost all the cases where we do such work, we also find that there is no computing infrastructure. So we put the computers in and put the full lab and rehabilitate the building where the infrastructure goes in. So we're able to do that, and we continue working with Mindset on in the distribution of the Mindset Learn channel and Mindset Learn for general education, and also Mindset Health, which has a specific focus on health matters. And we must say that also during the financial year, a portion of that channel went into the NHI channel that is currently being distributed at the NHI pilot sites. Risk management continue to strengthen that. Risk management is overseen or directed through the Audit and Risk Committee of the board. There is a risk officer position staffed with at least by the end of the financial year, there were at least three people in that office. Wes works with EXCO, and during the financial year, we revised the risk policy framework. We also revised the fraud prevention plan and also the assurance process plan, looking at combined assurance between the different combined assurance providers of the board. On page 7, that looks at internal audit. In the previous couple of financial years, the internal audit function was an outsourced function, and a decision was taken about 2 years ago to bring it inside. And this was the last financial year was the first year where the full cycle was done internally. Full cycle meaning the the creation of the three-year internal audit plan, the one-year internal audit plan, and also the execution of that plan fully. Internal audit function works under its own charter that is controlled and managed through the audit and risk committee of the board. Compliance, we also have a compliance office currently administratively working through the or managed by the internal audit, but it does report directly to EXCO on matters of compliance. The areas of interest during the financial year was monitoring on health and safety, development of the PIA manual, development also of document and health management with respect to PAJA, and also introduction of our obligations in respect of BOPI. We also have an innovation function whose job is to look a little bit into the long term and prepare the company for the relevant participation in some of the things that are happening in the industry, some of the rapid changes that are happening in the industry, where we have seen, for example, the introduction of having two ways of distributing video on demand into the into homes, one that uses the typical infrastructure that Centec has, and then another method that does not use any of the functions that Centec has traditionally. So this innovation hub, in particular, assist us in creating a presence in such a future so that, again, when that future comes, every broadcaster, every person who's interested in content distribution has access, should have access to such facilities. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We still have the finances.
Yes.
Thank you. I'll be quick. Just overall, the group, Centec has got four subsidiaries, so the financial statements are for the group. So the group revenue from operations increased by 8.4% to 975 million as compared to 2012-13, which was 899 million. Also, the total income for the group increased to 1.062 billion as compared to the 927 million from prior. Also, if we look at the group operating profit from operations, it increased by 4% to 201 million. Cash generated from operations decreased to 47 million from 226 million. I will deal with this in detail in the next few slides. The broadband funding, including interest net of taxation of 622 million, was surrendered back to National Treasury via the department. There was also additions or purchases or procurement of property, plant, and equipment amounting to 110 million that was spent in 2013-14 financial year. This was using Centec's own funds. The group has presented two comparative years as a result of restatements that occurred during the 2013-14 financial year, mainly from the taxation, specifically the current tax receivable and also deferred tax liability. And also in the past, the policy was to reclassify inventory, some of our major inventory or space, to property, plant and equipment, and that was that policy was reviewed, and we now we don't do the reclassification anymore. If we go to the next page, page 9, this is the overview of the statement of profit or loss and other comprehensive income in line with the IFRS. So I've already mentioned the fact that revenue has grown by 8.4%, but if we then exclude dual elimination for running both the analog and the digital terrestrial network, if the revenue has only increased by 6.6%, which is equivalent to your CPI. Also, there was an increase in group operating profit, and this was not significant as compared to last year. Also, there's a line there which talks about other income, and this was realized from the settlement of the post-retirement medical aid benefit from prior. The finance cost is decreased materially, and this is due to a reversal of interest of 173 million that happened in the prior, where we used to include as part of our income the interest that we received or we've earned from some of the government grants, specifically for broadband and easy grant. But if we were going to return that, or immediately when we received the letter from Treasury that we need to return the money, it means that that was no longer qualifying as our income. Taxation expense decreased due to the deduction of the amount that was paid to National Treasury. If we look at the statement of financial position, firstly, the company is liquid and also it's a going concern. And that also that was confirmed by the auditors. Non-current assets include property, plant, and equipment. The details are on the annual report. If we look at current assets, what constitutes current assets, we've got cash and cash equivalents of 1 billion. And this is made up of restricted cash, which is mainly from government grants, specifically for the rolling out of the DTT project. And also to note is that there is a huge decrease between what we had as balance for cash and cash equivalents for prior year as compared to this year, and the reason for that would have been mainly due to the 622 million that we have repaid to National Treasury for the broadband and easy project. There was a huge decrease in the trade and other receivable balance, and this is due to the improved collection of our debt. I've already mentioned the issue about the current tax receivable that has significantly decreased. Equity increased as a result of retained income increase, so as and when the company makes profit or continue to make profit, this obviously will then result in the equity of the company increasing. Non-current liability, to note there is the issue of the board took a decision to settle the post-retirement medical aid benefit liability that was sitting at 200 million in the previous financial year, where some of the members did take up the settlement, and the remaining balance is currently 100 million. If we look at current liabilities, it has decreased significantly, and this is mainly due to we've settled the loan that we had with DBSA, and then the second issue is that we had our trade and other payable decreased, where we put more effort to make sure that we comply with the Treasury regulation in terms of making payments to the creditors within 30 days. Statement of cash flow, I think to note here is the cash flow from operating activities decreased, and this is mainly due to obviously the concerted effort that I've mentioned, that we had a drive on making sure that all valid invoices are paid within 30 days. And also there was a huge decrease because we are coming to the end of the rollout of the DTT. Our trade payables have decreased from 239 million in the prior year to 142 million in the current year. Obviously, this will have an impact in your operating activities. I think the rest of the things are straightforward, but I think what to note is that with the 1 billion that is sitting in our bank account, Centec has planned in the corporate plan that we will spend around 645 million,
on capital project in the next financial, in the next 3 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think the conclusion is there for the sake of time. We're complete. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Shall I note hands for questions, comments? Honourable McKenzie, Honourable Dikele Ngitsotetsi, Honourable Ndunye. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, Persian carpet makers, when they handmade these fine Persian carpets, they always leave one flaw because they say only God is perfect. And I think Centex results are something like a fine Persian carpet. Congratulations on your clean audit. I think from where we've come, as many state-owned entities, from maladministration and bad record-keeping to unqualified audits, we almost praise each other for unqualified audits when that really is the benchmark and the standard to be expected. So when you achieve a clean audit, which is very, very difficult to do, it's certainly worthy of praise. Just one or two small comments. This is the flaw in your carpet. Your vacancy levels, I note on in your annual report on page 41, you've got the percentages are quite alarming, although the numbers are not that big. But certainly in terms of senior management and professional qualified, we're looking at 36% and 17% unfilled of planned vacancies. What is the reason for this? I noticed that in terms of employment equity, your numbers perhaps might not reflect the demographic requirements of government. So does that have something to do with the unfilled vacancies? It's just a question. And then the only target that you failed to meet related to the rollout of DTT. So clearly that the blame for that cannot be laid at your door. I see on page 64 of your annual report there's an amount of $89 million relating to a DTT Illumination government grant. Could you just give me a little bit of an explanation of the impact the lack of policy clarity on DTT is having on your business, and whether its effect is negative? Because I notice also on the notes, page 100, there's a dual illumination cost revenue of that $89 million again, and how can you mitigate this amount? And then there's an interesting amount, community broadcasters, $1.9 million. What does that figure involve? Are you funding them? Do they owe you that money? Are you subsidizing what they're doing? But other than that, it's an absolute pleasure to have this kind of report presented to the committee, and I congratulate you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me start by appreciating and acknowledging the clean audit. You know, I've never seen a presentation that starts with a performance, but I think we have a good reason for doing this. We're quite impressed, keep it up. And I would like to know the status regarding the judgment, the court judgment. Where are you now? And also, again, appreciating the fact that you have connected the primary and secondary schools in rural areas, the underserved areas. However, I would like to know if there's any role that you play in, the availability of educators, those who will be assisting learners to acquire the skills. Do you play any role, or it is with the Department of Education? Thank you.
So, thank you, Chairperson.
During 2011-2012 financial year, will you Sentech identify 197 frequencies to assist SABC? What is the status of this program now? Can you please tell us? Thank you.
Thanks, colleagues. I think as well, let me echo the sentiments of what has been said by the colleagues. It assists for us when an entity reaches a particular level of financial status that we can focus on the actual delivery and start looking into the detail. But it shows where you have financial stability, you are able even to have level of delivery. So I always say they go hand in hand. And I think initially, I mean, colleagues who might have previously in the previous term asked if this is sustainable when you have an clean audit, if you can, or unqualified audit with no measures of emphasis, more or less, or nothing that is really worrying from the AG's report or the auditor, external auditors. And the fact that you've really achieved it again, it shows the level of stability, and I hope that you'll be able to really keep it up the way you've been doing the work. Then comes to just some of the issues that I just wanted to raise, and maybe the issue of what we need to start. I think your colleague has raised around the issue of the vacancies. And just to remind, remember in terms of public service, the vacancy rate needs to be below 8%. That's what the regulation says. So once it's above 8%, it's not acceptable. I think that it needs to be clear, and I think you would have to, in line of that, I just wanted to emphasize that point in terms of what the colleagues have raised. Then, CEO, you raised the issue of the schools. And in terms of your target, if you look at the target, you have missed three schools, for example. I'm trying to find that page. You've missed three schools. You are targeted to do 14 schools. You've done 11, as per the annual report. And out of that, and the explanation, therefore, you are saying to us, I'm trying to find that so I can read exactly what you're saying. You are saying to us, it's because of the challenges of the stakeholders. Okay, I found the page on 46. Due to the challenges faced regarding the identification of the schools with related to stakeholders, some of the ILEP project listed below were not completed. And what I want to understand is this identification, and especially following it up because we've dealt with the issue of schools connectivity. And just to understand, and by the way, the report is due in November on the connectivity. That these three schools you are saying you were not able to do, is this the work that you're expecting from the department or the Department of Basic Education? I want to understand who is this stakeholder that you are referring to here that was not able to give us the detail. And then, we go to just page 25, the issue of low power transmitter project. Where is it now? Is it abandoned? Because I see here you are not able to achieve the target. And you're saying that SABC revised its target, while it's not within your ambit or within your control. But what is it? Because obviously if it's dependent, you've got to put it in your scorecard. It has to be very clear. The communication between yourself and SABC, and especially at this time of reporting, SABC was still accounting under the DOC. Surely they should have really assisted in terms of that. So just to explain where it is, how far are you dealing with it, and whether it's abandoned, because we'd want to, I think you know that we had planned a meeting to deal with this, so If it's out, then it means that we've got to be very clear on what we are doing going forward. Then there's an issue that just as well, the issue of your, I want to go to my notes, in terms of the reports, your IT system, your SAP program. Let me just find my notes properly in terms of what. Just explain in terms of how you're managing this. You had planned to upgrade, to have it functioning at a particular level. What's happening into this issue? If you can just give us that. The last issue for me. I think just appreciating even the feeling of the critical post, but that vacancy issue for me is especially at the level of where we need to see the compliance level, especially the people who are very critical in terms of that. Then the last issue. I think there's still, when you look at your reports, there are still issues around IT. That's why I spoke about this, but you still need to look at that process, tighten it up, and the monitoring specifically of that process, because you've got to be able to do that monitoring and make sure that there's work that you can do. I think that's something, I'm not so sure what did I do with my notes now. There's an issue that we had to, CFO, you had to condone on finances. If I'm missing it, I'm trying to find what I did. No, I'll pick it up, I'll come back to it. Let me just look at it. I'll come back to it, maybe respond to those issues that we have raised. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair. We'll deal with the questions and I'll send some of the comments, get some of the comments from my colleagues. On the issue of vacancies, yes, indeed, the vacancies were quite high during the under review. And it's not, I mean, the one thing that certainly the board has emphasized for management is to make sure that, and that we have reported on in the committee, is to make sure that we deal with the glaring problem in the HR report, which is the fact that we don't have enough females, particularly at the professional level, and also at, if you look at the in terms of our employment equity plans, we also have to recognize that at the unskilled level, but the target is at the professional level, also the technical technician level, and there is a concerted effort to do so, and for the first time during the financial year, we had a female becoming a manager of one of our OC center, I mean operating centers. Essentially, an operating center is a regional center for all things that have to do with Centec in that geography. And you have one, for example, and this particular one is in PE. So the entire operations of Centec around PE are headed by a female technical manager, and in order to do that, you have to go up the ranks. It's much, much better. In fact, you almost cannot be an OC manager without going through the ranks. So, we are making that a concerted effort, and the board is challenging us on that, and we have made some improvements on that aspect, and the company is able to operate while we are managing that national challenge that we need to fulfill. But it's not just, as I said, an issue of employment equity. The skills out there the skills that we require at Centec are not in abundance. The broadcasting sector is changing quite a lot. We operate in a particularly competitive labor market. We can bring people in and they can go to greener pastures. It's fine. In order to attract people, we have to do a lot of work. That is not a problem. We have, in fact, cast our net wider in terms of looking at skills before they come out of tertiary institutions. So we're engaging a lot more with tertiary institutions to make sure that we attract people, we sell the company in this particular aspect of the ICT industry in order to get people interested in working for the company. But we do take it that the vacancy rate is glaring in the report, and we hope that by the end of the financial year, when we come back to report for this financial year, we'll see a much bigger change in those numbers there, a positive change. Then on DTT, just going back to page 64 there, the issue of dual elimination, essentially, is there are two parts of dual elimination that we have talked about during our DTT address to the committee. The first one is the formal one that starts with when the minister pronounces on the performance period. And then when the performance period starts, then dual elimination starts, then the regulations kick in and different parties have different obligations and also rights. In fact, even the regulator then starts taking the, or starts counting on what people have done in terms of their obligations. There's also another type of dual elimination that we have also highlighted, which is the dual elimination that Centec is going through right now. And essentially, we're running two networks, one digital and one analog. Every time that we say that we have reached 82% of the population, that means that there is DTT network infrastructure covering the related geography. And that comes with cost, and that is a cost that is reflected in the dual elimination columns. The biggest cost there, I mean, and we've been having a lot of discussions with the department and National Treasury on how to manage that dual elimination cost. The biggest cost is in relation to booking satellite capacity. There's nothing we can do; we can't switch it off. We have to book it because that is the capacity that will be available that will be used for when DTT comes through. Anything else is manageable, and we do have some targets that have been set to us by National Treasury for the next financial year. There is no pressure on the business in this current financial year. I think that was one of the questions there. In particular, National Treasury has just confirmed that for 2014-2015, it will be able to cover the dual elimination. They require provide the funds required to cover the dual elimination costs. Then the item there on community broadcasters, it's money that was set at Centec for since a long time ago, maybe last 10 years. And every year we use that money under the subsidy program of the department to disperse it to community broadcasters that are being subsidized. And that is a problem that has been going on for some years. Each community broadcaster gets about, let's say, just less than 5,000 rand per month. Each qualifying community broadcaster, 5,000 a month of subsidy. And that's the disbursement that you take. The Ibuzana matter, we are in compliance with the court judgment, that's the first thing. And during the financial, the year under review, in fact, we did two trips to Botswana and Zimbabwe. One trip specifically set with the Botswana itself, and then with the regulator in Botswana. And then the second trip, we went to the regulator in Zimbabwe, because that was one of the affected areas there. We do have letters, but a letter from the regulator in Zimbabwe confirming that there have not been any incidents or similar occurrences of the problem. That the meeting in Zimbabwe was on the 21st of February, of March, and the meeting in Botswana was on the 12th of February. In Botswana, we have minutes of meetings with Botswana confirming, in fact, that there were a couple of rumored occurrences of the issue. I mean, about maybe less than five cases. tests were done. We went to the markets where some of these decoders have been sold, and we confirmed together with the general manager of Botswana that in fact the SABC services are not accessible in Botswana. In addition, we got those decoders and we use them in our and we monitor them on a regular basis in case of their such occurrences. And we also have agreements such that if there are any rumored occurrences, we will be informed directly by the Botswana and also the regulators. The judgment called us to take all reasonable steps to make sure that there is no such spillage, noting that some of these things do happen on a regular basis. But the minute we find something happens, we then fix it immediately. But also the most important thing is also to keep our systems up to date. This particular situation occurred because for the period of between 2004 and 2009-10, Sentech was in financial problems and was not able to upgrade its systems. And as a result, these things do happen when you don't upgrade. So we're quite comfortable that we are fully compliant with the obligations, both in terms of the letter of the law and the spirit of the judgment there. Then on the CSI, we do have particularly extended our interest into training of teachers. In fact, we had discussions with CASA about how we can even modify our obligations, license obligations, to make use of our signal distribution so that we can combine both the connectivity and the ability to do signal distribution in order to improve the quality of learning of the teachers. And we then made a presentation together with ICASA just to test the idea, through ICASA in particular, to the Department of Higher Learning and Training. There was a lot of interest in doing so. And that intervention is really targeted at the NHS. We haven't formalized it yet. That is something that will be now formalized in our next corporate plan. And again, working with the shareholder to make sure that all the we work through the systems properly, and that the solutions are able to get the desired results between the different departments of government. Then the issue about the FM expansion, we call that Project FM expansion, and the interest of that project is to make sure that the coverage of stations like Ukozi, stations like Tobela, is as big as the coverage of SAFM, RSG, and then Radio 2000 later. And we definitely, we did pick up the frequencies around the country. We proposed that to the SABC. During the corporate planning sessions, we try to align ourselves with the SABC such that we don't put something in our corporate plan saying we are going to implement the FM expansion, and then we didn't find that thing with the in the corporate plan of the SABC. So we've taken it out, but during the when the committee sat, the new administration, we actually realigned the SABC, and there is now an entry in the SABC's corporate plan that aligns with our, that we have used them to make a similar entry, and we will be implementing some form of FM expansion for SABC services. It is not as extensive. It will not use all the 197 frequencies, but it's a start because this program is, we believe that should have happened some time ago. And I mean, we do understand that the decision is made by the SABC eventually, with the CASA providing the frequencies. But we do understand that there is a particular financial issue related to that. And that calls for us to look at this program in a sense of our common public service mandate. The particular areas that we're talking about are areas where the SABC may find maybe not a formal business case in a financial sense. There is a public service business case around issues of diversity, and we need to make sure that we align ourselves and keep our operations sustainable. But we're in complete 100% support of the program. We talked about vacancies. We note that 8%, and we hope that when we come back, we'll have much, much better numbers there. issue around schools, we during the financial year in particular, there was an agreement between the company and the shareholder, and rightfully so, that the school's connectivity must be a formal structure problem, making sure that there's alignment with the program within the Department of Communications at the time, and also the Department of Basic Education. And I mean, there was a little bit of a slow progress there, but we at least we managed to put most of the 11 of the 14 schools that we intended to do. We are working again with the department through the ministry and the deputy minister in particular. There's been already one school that we are looking at, and we will be expediting this program. Our intention is to make sure that at least we serve the provincial departments of education at a minimum, that if we get to, I mean, we can't get to the end of the financial year without having spent the budget that is there that we've set aside to connect schools and give all these competing facilities. And we'll do whatever it takes to make sure that there is that benefit that goes to. Thank you.
So, Kim, I see, or you still have questions that are up for me?
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just to add on the FM expansion, we have sent the proposal, as the CEO has indicated, to the SABC. That covers the whole country. And what the SABC did, they sent the proposal to ICASA in August. So as of then, they are waiting for a response to ICASA on the license for the spectrum. On low power, there is a chairperson, the presentation that is coming on the same effect. I think the committee has requested us and the SAPC to come and update the committee on the same effect. But I can just maybe give a brief. LOPA was divided into two, was divided into TV and radio. And as I have indicated in my presentation, that as we see now, DTH or satellite covers the whole country. The SABC has decided that they will use DTH to replace low power on TV. So what they'll do, they'll identify a place where that doesn't have coverage, and then they'll buy on behalf of the members of the community, they'll buy the dishes, they'll buy the decoders, and then connect them using satellite, and then they'll carry the cost. But they'll when we come here next week, on the 31st, they'll confirm that we've confirmed notes of them. The low power on FM or radio will partly be covered by the FM expansion, but secondly will be that will continue the low power on radio will continue as far as we know from the SABC. That hasn't stopped. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Chair, there's a question that I didn't turn the page, so I didn't see some of the questions, including SEP. The SEP project is broken down into the SEP facility that we have is fairly old, and the intention is to upgrade the entire platform. We've started in the financial year, the intention was to do a technical upgrade so that the system at least is stable. And that was done, that was completed. What we now set up for this financial year is to do a functional upgrade, which will then allow us to provide our processes. Thank you. And I'm definitely the IT area, including the governance and so on and so forth of IT, is a particular area of interest, not only for management, but also for the audit committee.
Yeah, you wanted to say something?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I also wanted to briefly add a word of appreciation. But CEO, I wanted some specifics around your strategy to assist smaller people in terms of being able to be part of this ICT revolution. it becomes important as we look ahead in terms of this administration in particular, that there's much more clarity as to your approach and your strategy and the targets, because at the moment it's difficult to assess that. Also, what I wanted to check is these targets that you set in terms of percentages. And I suppose it's easy to understand if you are part of management, but for us sitting as MPs, sometimes it's very difficult to understand that the target was at 84% or at 70%. It becomes difficult to lay your finger on the real numbers that you are talking about. Thank you very much, Chair.
Just one thing. Just explain the issue of the investigations you've concluded. What were the outcomes?
Thank you very much, Honourable Deputy Minister and Honourable Chairperson. There are two ways that we are dealing with development of particularly small companies in our environment. And they deal with us in two ways. One is as suppliers of goods and services to us. And then on the other hand, they use our systems in order to create their own businesses, so as users of our systems. On the supplier side, this is a very particular area of interest for the board through a number of committees, including the Social and Ethics Committee and the Policy and Regulatory Coordination Committee. And the end result is that we're going to have much better, tighter targets around that in the next financial year. In the current financial year, what we're doing is, as an example of what we're doing right now, is that by the end of the month, we're going to have an enterprise day where the intention is to introduce Centec to people who would never otherwise know about Centec. And we're going to advertise it, get everybody in, hear about the company from us, understand what where the opportunities are, and what does it or what the world around us looks like for people then to create their direct opportunities. So that's one area of preparation. And then in the next financial year, Deputy Minister, we should then be able, in the corporate plan, to have much clearer targets about improvements in the use of small medium enterprises. And then on the other side of users of our of the systems, we term our systems, Deputy Minister, open access systems. And the reason we're saying that is that a lot of times, in order for one to be in the broadcasting industry, it takes a lot of capital expenditure and ownership of infrastructure for you to be in the system. And one of the things that we noticed some time ago was that going back to the whole AAA inquiry and the reasons for the existence of Centec, if Centec had not been created as a separate entity, you would never probably have seen the type of vibrance that we've seen in the community broadcasting industry right now. You'd never see so many community broadcasters alive, both on TV and radio. So at least we can tick that box. The second thing that we have to tick now is that as technology evolves so quickly, a community broadcaster on TV should have as much an ability to provide the content on tablets for catch-up TV, for video on demand, as much as any private broadcaster. But it takes a lot of effort and a lot of money and technical capability to set up such infrastructure per community broadcaster. So we want to bring every community broadcaster into the new age as the world changes, without them again having the same challenges that they would have had about 15 years ago on just basic infrastructure. We also target our, we also look at, we've created certain products that are targeting, for example, new pay TV operators. A typical new pay TV operator that comes into the market has a lot of difficulties, including, for example, access to homes with dishes, access to having to subsidize their own logistics of set-top boxes. So the problem that we've come up with that is people are responding to is where people can share a lot of the available capacity. They can share the satellite, they can share the dishes that are sitting at home, they can share the set-top boxes. And recently we've seen a lot of people, but even non-broadcasters, people who just provide, for example, video on demand, who are using this facility to get into the content market. And we should be launching at least one previously entity that has previously not been in the industry and who is going into content industry looking at video on demand. And that would typically be classified as a small or medium enterprise of the time. So that is an interest because that area of supporting entrepreneurs, incubation, in a sense, is almost unlimited. And we can, the only thing that really matters there are the ideas that people have. As long as we keep our capabilities very robust, as long as we keep our costs very, very low, then people will... and then we create a facility where we can advise people about the industry. Then we probably we think that we can create a lot of employment there. Whereas on the supply side, we'll just always be limited by the amount of work that we have to do with budgets and so on and so forth. And we hope that we should be able to have much clearer targets, and we'll be working with the department in preparing our new corporate plan for yourself and the minister. And then on the target as percentages, it's a very, very difficult one, and we'll reflect on it to see how some of the things that that on one hand our internal audits and then the AG says they must be measurable, how we put them in such a measurable way, but still make them be able to make them understandable to the wider audience. Perhaps what we can do is always link a number with, and that's something that we've done in the past, link a number with some other way of viewing the same target. For example, a percentage coverage, the best way to do it is map it with a map. And then we can be able to communicate better. Then on investigations, Honorable Chairperson, in fact today I just got a message from the CCMA from our IR department that some of the people that were part of the investigation that were then released from the company, that matter has now been closed at the CCMA. So we've implemented quite robust methods of dealing with things that go wrong within our organization. So some of the cases here have just been completed at the CCMA as we talk today.
Thank you very much. An option, you still have a follow-up. Just one thing and then we close. We take Dr. Ray before we go to lunch.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Rahapi, for your, as usual, very illuminating presentation. But what I would like, please, from you is an undertaking signed in blood that you will not resign or be poachable.
If I knew, I wouldn't have agreed. It's unfair on him, because we've got to allow for that concern. But yeah, I think the board has had your sentiments, and he has had the sentiments, like what I would say. Just to request, in terms of us going forward, board chairperson and CEO, I think transformational issues are quite important. But when we come to the next level of strategic plan, let's see how do we incorporate that into our strategic plan. So this is what we'll also be looking at come early next year, our time for strategic plan. planning sessions, but when we deal with the strat plans. So we really want to look at that. And then the other issue, when I say transformational, even in terms of if there's an opportunity, because you're operating in a technical environment, are there opportunities for learnership that you can incorporate young people into that, give them exposure, give them experience, because we've got to contribute. That's what I'm talking about, transformational agenda. We've got to contribute into this thing of developing and diversifying our industries. So just look at that, and then we can have a proper discussion when we come during our strategy. I just thought that, let me flag this thing so that you can think about them when you do your strategy, you plan your strategies, so that when we come back, you can be able to say to us, this is what Santec can contribute in the sector in terms of transformation. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think the sentiments of the committee has been echoed in terms of your performance. Thanks. I think we'll take Dot's domain before we go to lunch, colleagues. I don't know if we've got them ready. I know I have, let me just quickly get my papers on set. Okay. We've got, I think, Mr. Rowland, you are the board member here. Okay, coming closer. Okay. Allow Mr. Rowland to make the opening remarks while the CEO is connecting the presentation. Welcome, Mr. Rowland. Sorry, Dr. Rowland. Please represent your title. My apologies.
Honourable Chair, and I think the Deputy Minister is still with us, Minister and members.
What we have in this report, as Dr. Rowland has said, is
what we managed to do in the past financial year, the one that ended on the 31st of March 2014. And it includes also the audited statement that we received from our auditors, PwC, which shows that we received what is called an unqualified audit. If I may then proceed with presentation, the annual report has quite a substantial number of pages covering the industry dynamics before it gets to our performance objectives. And that is meant to give a picture of the environment we are in. We normally found out in the past that when we talk about what we do, without giving a picture or background, people, then there are basic stuff, there are basic things that may not be clear enough. So we thought let us include that with the second level domains that we oversee in under.za. Those are all of them, the active ones, like your AC.za, CO.za, Council A, and so forth, and the private, the private use ones, and the dormant ones. That's just an overview of how the value chain of domain name registration in South Africa works, and ZNAS policy and regulation role over those. From the people who register domain names, whom we call registrants, who register domain names through the internet service providers, or what we call registrars, who then access through the register operator the second level domain. So if a person wants to register a CO.za name, then they will access, the registrar will access that name through the register operator. That's just an overview of the of how the ZA domain name space is growing, especially the second level domains, the four second level domains, CO.za, NetZA, OFZA, and WebZA, which are under the ZA central registry. And the reason why we picked that particular layer, the central registry, is because that's where the bulk of the names are sitting, and that's where also as well the funded domain name registration operations are residing. So you would see from that, from those statistics that especially CO.za continues to grow. Around 950,000 domain names to date, and then also NetZA and WebZA, which we only relaunched early this year, have also started picking up some numbers, and OZA as well. Now, in terms of our performance against objectives, that's the second part of our report, really, that talks about performance against objectives on page 28. We had four priorities, or what you call our key objectives for the year. One was in policy and regulation, the second one was in promotion and development, another one was infrastructure enhancements, and then the fourth one was in internet governance. Under policy and regulation, the key priorities or key targets was to finalize the charters for the NetZA, OFZA, and WebZA, the second level domains. So the charters are the constitutions and founding policies of second level domains. We inherited all these second level domains in the past, and we had not focused our attention on these in the past 3 years or so. We had focused too much on establishing the central registry. Now, with that established, our work in the past year was focusing on clarifying the policies, for example, such things as who is able or eligible to register names in OZA and who's not, you know. So that's the work we did. We ran public consultations. We consulted with the local internet industry especially. And then we came to a point where we finalized the charters. Admittedly, we had set to finalize the charters before the end of the financial year. And we must point out that that wasn't fully achieved for several other dynamics. One of the of those was the reason that the board referred certain matters back to the committee dealing with the drafting, after it became apparent that there were some persuasive reasons that we provided after the fact. So by the end of the year, internally the drafts were there, but they were yet to be approved. They were only approved by the board in its May meeting. We also had set under policy and regulation to work with the ZA Central Registry. Dr. Roland referred to us launching the three city top level domains, the .Cape Town, .Devon, and .Joburg. We are responsible as the domain name authority with the policy oversight of those top level domains, even though the contracting relationship is between the ZA Central Registry and ICANN, the entity in America that gives you rights to establish your own top level domains. So we're responsible for developing the policies. There was a process called the reserve name list process, which is a policy allowing government entities to reserve names in these three city domains if they wanted to. We held at least two workshops with government departments, one in November last year, another one in February, and then also with the city's consent, the city municipality's consent. And eventually, of course, we received the city's proposed name lists, which we since then preserved under the three top level domains. We also finalized what you call launch policies, which are all the policies that are prescribed by the U.S. entity that gives you these rights to launch the top-level domains. We worked on those policies covering trademark, a process called Sunrise, to allow trademark owners a first move advantage to register names before the names could be available to the public. And then also a process called Land Rush for premium names that people buy at a higher fee than normal. And then there were operational policies as well that we worked with the central registry for these dot cities. The second objective, promotion and development, was more focused on communications and awareness. We set to do substantially more than what we achieved, but it was dependent a lot on how fast the progress of the dot cities was moving, and two, how fast the work of relaunching NetZA, OrgZA, and WebZA was moving. So when there were certain referrals back, there were some portion also of communications awareness that were not as much implemented. But we still ran the campaign, the media and social media campaign, with the website redesign as well, so that it could be made much more friendly, especially to people to access information. Our awareness, our campaign as well, included this city's launch planning, and our work, as said now, was the one on stakeholder relations. We had to communicate especially with the cities. We had also to meet different stakeholders, especially business entities, trademark organizations, to update them so that they could get their clients and their members to be ready for these kinds of launch. And marketing and awareness as well, we ran a campaign under dot cities through a service provider, especially online, and through ISPs that are accredited to register names to make people aware that we will be launching these three city top level domains. The third objective was infrastructure enhancements. It's the infrastructure that we have in place. The key there was to, we already have what you call here best practice domain name registration infrastructure in the form of the central registry, which we spent some time to have established. And the infrastructure that they run is quite robust. It's secure. It's at the top level with your any other competitor we consider to be the best, whether it's .com or .uk. But we still wanted to deploy a standard called DNSSEC, or Domain Name System Security, which is really a standard that allows you to sign the zone or sign ZA in some way, in an electronic way, or sign also these third-level domains like .za. So that when you access a website, you get a signature, you know, on your search bar or on your browser, some form of signature that guarantees you that the website you are accessing is the legitimate one. So that you do not, it's a standard that helps prevent domain name hijacking or website hijacking, where you receive an email from apps and says click here, and when you click there, it takes you to a website that really looks like APSA, but it's not APSA. So the standard helps us to make sure that you have some form of a confirmation that you are accessing the correct website. And if it's not, it doesn't have that signature, then you'll know that you must get away from the website because it's fake and it's for phishing. Now, the work of deploying DNSSEC was dependent largely on how fast the ZA Central Registry was moving with .cities. And once we made all the preparations for the launch, but based on their request, we decided to defer the launch to the current financial year, the DNSSEC deployment, and as things are looking now, we are about to start that deployment. We also wanted to have more data redundancy, or registry data redundancy. Registry data is the domain name information for each name that is registered. There's information that is there of who holds the name, which ISP was used, when was the name registered, and so forth. We call that registry data. The backup and maintenance mechanisms we have are very robust in any case, but we still wanted to do more. This is the internet, you know, you want to be as protected as possible. Our target here was to have the central registry backup the data using registry data as cross-service provider locally, because the ones that we have are all currently sitting outside South Africa. And it appeared that the entity that we targeted to use was still not running a system that was up to the standard we were looking for. And we since then decided to defer this project to allow as well that those upgrades in that entity. So in a sense, though this target has not been achieved, it has not in any way affected the redundancy level, in the sense that we already are on registered data scope, but we just wanted especially a local service provider. The fourth one is on internet governance, which is becoming more and more a hot topic in the last few years. We, as the Domain Name Authority, participate in a number of internet governance fora and development fora. One of those being ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, which is based in the US and runs the central database of the internet, what we call the root zone, and is responsible for making policy for the internet on the domain name side of things. We participate in ICANN meetings. There are three ICANN meetings a year, rotating in different continents. We hosted last year the ICANN 47 meeting in Durban in July, and we also hosted alongside it as well what was called the inaugural Africa DNS Summit, also in Durban, which took place just before the ICANN meeting. And we continue to participate in this fora to influence, or to try as best as possible to influence policy that comes out of from there to also be favorable to the South African internet name space. And there are different structures that we participate in within this fora. One of those that we didn't mention is what is called the United Nations Internet Governance Forum, which as well we participate to from time to time. Now, that's all on the four key objectives. We covered also in our reports what is called alternative dispute resolution regulations, which is a process that comes from the Minister of Communications. In terms of the ECT Act, the Minister was required to promulgate regulations that people can use to resolve disputes in case people were, you know, had problems with certain names registered, where, especially in CO.za. This process allows them to have their disputes heard outside court using a dispute resolution process. It started in 2007, and each year we've been now having around 30 to 35 disputes resolved. To date, more than 200 disputes. It's a good process. It's helped minimize cyber squatting in South Africa, in .za, but it still needs some improvements, and we are talking to the department about that, what we think going forward could be done to further enhance this particular mechanism. But in terms of the regulations, we are responsible for overseeing its implementation and for accrediting the adjudicators and so forth. We also saw the deployment of a process of a system called MAC validation system from the ZA Central Registry, which we since then pushed into .ZA. And this is a system that allows businesses or trademark owners to register their trademarks with the ZACR and get upfront protection, so that if somebody registers a name elsewhere that is similar to your brand or trademark name, you get an email or something alerting you, and then you can veto the switch. So it's an upfront protection mechanism on intellectual property rights. And then in closing on financial matters, we circulated as well our audited financial statement. The key point is just that, as Dr. Roland said, and Roland is also a member of the Finance Committee, we are wholly dependent on the second level domain name revenue that comes from the ZA Central Registry. That's the revenue that they generate for CO.ZA, NetZA, WebZA, and OrgZA registrations. And we are wholly now funded from those fees. We don't take obviously the whole fee, we just take a portion of what they charge per name. And we've accumulated some surplus as well, and that surplus is well, it's no worry, because it's positive in the sense that we have the money in, but it's already set for contingency because we are required to have also some contingency funding like any organization. We're no longer receiving funding from the Department of Communication, from the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services now, since we've become self-funding. And we indicated as much to the previous ministers that if any more funding comes, it will be used for special projects that we would separately account for. In the year under review, we didn't receive any such funding from the department. The audit that we've received is an unqualified one. I don't know, maybe sometimes because we deal with limited budgets, maybe it's not a big issue to account for them. We normally received clean audits since our establishment in 2004. So I don't know, Chair, if I should also run quickly through the audit statement or should take. Okay, on the audit statement, I think without getting into much detail, the most important thing is that, as I've indicated, that the government grant has fallen away. That is covered and stated in page 3. Of the audited statement. It's the current statement by the auditors as well, confirming that they are satisfied that we've accounted sufficiently about how we use our funding. We also have on page 7, as it continues, I mean, still on page 6, that you are going on the concern and so forth. Next page is the directors of the NDT and so forth. Page 8 is our statement of financial position, or what you call a balance sheet that shows the money that we have in from a property, plant and equipment, which is really very limited, is the IT machines that we have, and they continue to depreciate. That's why the figure was 6,600 in 2013, sitting at 2.6 now. And then also current assets, the trade and other receivables, some of the monies that we due from the central registry. And then also then the ones that we received on a month-to-month basis are going up to 6.7 and they are under review. So that's the pretty much how is the understanding in terms of the balance sheet. On the next page, you have the statement of comprehensive income as well that shows your revenue that came from the domain name fees and other income. Another income being effectively, when we hosted the ICANN meeting in Durban, we made several advances for ICANN, and thereafter they had to pay us back some of the money. So that's the kind of other income that you see there. The limited portion of that was with some foreign currency gains, the monies that we managed to save on foreign currencies when dealing with ICANN. And the monies go, I mean, if you go on operating surplus, the figures that are there, you'll notice under interest received that it suddenly started to go up compared to 2013, and that's really because now we had more money in the bank from which to generate interest. And the finance costs for 2014 ceased because we no longer had any loan to finance, whereas in 2013 we had to finance some loans. On the statement of changes in equity, you will see as well how our revenue has been growing starting in 2012 when we started to be paid from the domain name fees, from opening up in the red in April 2012 to closing that year of 2012 with a positive 5.2, and then you look at 2013, we closed with 2.4 million, and that's mainly because we were starting to use much more money and we reduced the surplus, and then also the balance at the end of March is 6.9. It's important to point out generally that well, if you were to track our revenue, you will see that from the very CR domain name fees, it's growing gradually, and the reason is that the domain names themselves keep on increasing the number of registrations, and that's what informs the steady growth in our revenue in the last 3 years. You have the statement of cash flows. I don't know if I need to go through that. I suppose it's clear as it stands. There are some other notes that are important that have been pointed out there. One important one, of course, being the fact that until we started receiving domain name fees, we were VAT exempted. And once we started receiving the fees, then the taxman went as much to say, The taxman went as much as say, well, for this one, I must charge some form of tax. So we started paying that. But we are still tax exempted, but we pay VAT because we now receive VAT fees. I think that's explained under note 7 on page 19. There was an item, okay, I think I've covered it as well. So pretty much that's the statement. I'll take some questions, and if there be any chair that I'm not able to take well, I will have to, before the close of business today, return to you in writing. Unfortunately, our treasurer is still overseas with the board chair. Thank you.
Shall we take comments on our Kenzie?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Firstly, let me compliment you on your annual report. You talk small budgets. It's not the size of the budget that counts, it's the quality. Now, an annual report can run to 5 pages that you can print out on your printer. That's really all the basic information we need to see when we evaluate the performance of a company. So that you haven't wasted money, like our friends of USASA that are not here, on printing these things, speaks volumes for the kind of corporate culture that you have running in your entity, and I congratulate you for that, for not wasting money. Just a comment, please. Let me also congratulate you on not taking taxpayers' money to run your organization, and the fact that you are self-funded, you're running at a surplus, and may you continue to do so. That, by the way, Chairperson, that also impressed me very much about Centec, was that there was no borrowings, that it, all the capex, everything is self-funded. Very impressive. There's an item just in your detailed income statement on page 23 that talks of fines and penalties, late payment of PAYE, UIF, and VAT. Clearly that's 229,000 Rand of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we trust that going forward, that kind of thing won't happen again. There's also an item, if you could just fill me in, compensation commissioner, 208,000, what that relates to. And if I can also compliment you, Dr. Rowland, and the rest of the board, on the small emolument you take for your directors' fees and the work that you do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Perhaps I need some help with my arithmetic here. Obviously one's noticed that your income going down and your number of registered domains going up and the reduced fees is part of that. But now I've been trying to do a little bit of arithmetic here. And this is simple arithmetic and it floors me. Your revenue from registry fees was 6.6 million, round figures. Your number of domain names is 950,000. Now that would then mean that they should be paying 7 Rand each. But you're actually charging 35 Rand? Can you just explain that? And I know there is an explanation there. And the other thing was, I think last year when you were with us, you were talking about changing the computer system which administers all of this. Has that been completed and has everybody been migrated from the old, to the new one, all the ISPs? Thanks.
Thank you,
Chairperson. I must now quote page 34 regarding the appointment of a policy and regulation manager. Page 34. The appointment was recommended and later on it was declined. What was the reason given for declining the offer? And you also talk about a small budget, and that is page 35. On your third quarter, you say in the meantime that now would outsource agent policy work. To what extent would the outsourcing impact on your budget, this small budget you are referring to?
Thank you very much, members. I think for me as well, let me just echo the sentiments, but more for me is a concern I think on your the document under risks, risk management, and this is what is concerning me. The paragraph reads, the company's risk to liquidity relates to the availability of funds to cover future commitments. I'm just trying to understand if, I understand you are saying that you are managing this by not getting into contracts, but what would assist the institution or the company to be able to get out of this risk area? Have the board, for example, and maybe management, look at ways of mitigating this? What would ensure that there is sustainability and future sustainability for this institution, or even assurance? Because if you are to look at this paragraph, it's simply a bit worrying. Why? Because it simply says to us, we can wake up tomorrow and it might not be there. That's what is concerning me. If you can just, for me, explain that. Thanks. I think the other colleagues have really raised a number of issues around the finances, and maybe appreciating as well the work that is being done where you are self-funding, but the concern is it's that paragraph that I have.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just say the questions as they came from the Honourable Mackenzie. He had a question on page 23 of this of the audited statement, which is the detailed, sorry, the detailed income statement, which is normally attached as an aid to understanding this the audited statement. The payments that were noted there, or the payments, for PayYE, UIF, and VET, those are the ones, right? Yes. The bulk of those late payments, or those fines, really, and penalties, were really due to, we could say, misunderstanding. I don't know if there could be misunderstanding with the taxman. But we applied to register for VET when we started receiving these domain name fees, and the VET registration process took months to complete. And when eventually we were told that we are now registered, we were told that, well, we will fine you because you haven't paid for all those months. So as much as we tried to protest, we say, but we had filed applications and we were waiting for confirmation. So we were fined those amounts. But I'm happy to say that I think in August, the bulk of what we fined was reimbursed to us. So that's all what he wanted is for those late payments. The compensation commissioner, those are the payments as well that we pay. I'm not sure how it works, but we receive it once a year. There's something from the Department of Labor that we must pay to them, that amount of money. Yeah. So it relates to other things, to your having employees and, you know, but it comes once a year as an invoice. That is normally a sort of a minimal invoice when it comes. From the Honorable Sheen, the observation on 6.6 or around so revenue based on 950,000 names. One of the names when we closed the year were not at 950, they were probably at 930s or so, but they still then continue to grow. Unfortunately, when we did the report, we thought we won't to give you such an outdated picture, we'll give you a more recent one. That's the first part. The other dynamic that you correctly observed and recalled from our previous engagement is the fact that we are migrating from an old system, which we call a legacy system, Foxy.za. It was an email-based system that was quite laborious for people to register names. They would take minutes to register names, whereas the new system, which is automated and cheaper, it takes a minute, or even less so if your bandwidth is running okay. The legacy system, in the report itself, I think on a particular page where I have under the industry overview, there are some pie charts there that show on page 20 the market share. This, if you look at local and international registrars, you will see that 189,000 names are still sitting on the legacy, and those names were charged at 75, not at 35. It's a matter of trying to push people away from the old system to the new system. And under the new system, they are, in fact, the registrars are charged 35 rand. So it's sort of a two-tier kind of revenue system. And hence, sometimes you may see the names here, but the revenue not sort of matching up. So we think by this time next year,
probably that legacy registrar interface figure would have dropped a lot, because we are, whether it's a good thing or not, it's open to debate, but we are raising the fees further, and we are trying to keep the fees down on the other side. And it's working quite well, because most names are fast migrated into the new system. Honorable, so this quite asked about the appointment of the police and regulation manager that was eventually declined, and that was a missed target, admittedly. And for me, as the head of the organization, a very frustrating one, because you have a lot of work then. You know, I have somebody, I've named somebody who's coming, and then you realize the person is no longer coming. Unfortunately, there was an extended dynamics within the board to try and resolve the appointment. Our ECT Act says, for our section, the board appoints employees. So as much as from the side of management, we had a name, you know, which was sent out well around December. People were away. We had to wait until the people met in February or so. And at that time, when they came, the candidate had changed his mind. So that's what threw us out, and the person didn't accept the offer. And then we continued, regardless, with the work, trying to spread as much work on policy internally, and with the view that we will outsource most of the work, I mean, some work if needs be. I must admit that we didn't, under that period, outsource any work. And if any budget implication, there was no any specific budget line implication except the salaries of staff members. So that's how we handled it. But the person, if I may have an update, we've now appointed the Police and Regulation Manager starting on the 1st of November. Okay. From the chairperson, the risk to liquidity, the question was mainly how do we manage risk to make sure that we don't wake up tomorrow and make sure, I mean, we don't wake up tomorrow without any money to run the organization. It's an interesting one. We are liquid for the short to the medium term, obviously, depending on domain and fees. It raises the question of what will happen in the future. We've had around 1,300 top-level domains entering the internet, from your .music to your .devon to your .london to your .fashion. Will that affect the number of names registered in ZA? We do not know, but it's something that we are benchmarking very much against. That's why we take the surplus that we've been generating last year, the 2.plus million, and we think this year there may be some surplus as well of around the same figure, and we invested it especially as contingency, so that at least we can be guaranteed to go on, even if it will come to a sudden change and names drop. We will go on at least for some reasonable period before we will come to closure. But we are confident that the way things are, the number of names registered will continue to grow, and will continue to keep some portion of the revenue as contingency. So we are not too worried about the growth of the names. We are a country of around 50 million people. We only have around 1 million domain name registrations. We think with more awareness, we'll see more and more people register names in ZA. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members and from the top of the domain. I think for me, it will say from into the department minister, there's more need. Okay, you wanted to say something, Tim. Let me give you to say something.
Maybe just a quick one. Thank you, Chair, before they disappear. With regard to your objectives, I was looking at internet governance objective. In my understanding, in the telecoms, data is the future. You are I was just wondering, you know, your active participation through ICANN with major players like the US and many other countries showing interest as to where do you derive your mandate from, and as to how does it feed back to national processes. Because if we don't oversee that, we'll find that the world is somewhere else with your blessing, and as a nation, having not had an opportunity to really bring our national specific concerns around internet governance, especially in the context of our constitution, the values built in there, the impact concerns that it's a new space. We have two of us here with a clear understanding of what the organization is actively participating.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Our mandate comes from simply the ACT Act. I must say that our participation in this forum is at one level of the two, that is two levels. There's a level on internet governance that is purely public policy that deals with issues that relate to jurisdiction, privacy laws of each country. We do not participate at that level. Rather, we leave that to the department itself. We have been talking and we are still talking to the department, and they have a representative who regularly attends ICANN meetings and covers such portions that are really purely public policy that relate to government. The ACT Act requires us nevertheless to advise the ministry on all these matters, and hence our engagement as well with the department. We, as I said earlier on, that internet governance has become a hot potato for many various reasons, from espionage, from your Julian Assange to Snowden and so forth, to the processes within the United Nations and elsewhere, from including the World Economic Forum recently, because everybody is fighting over how should the internet be governed and who should govern it. That level of debate and discussions, Deputy Minister, is what we really depend on the department to give us a cue on. We have no mandate to participate at that level. But what I can, or in this forum, is the policies that relate purely to the domain name, space, the practices. They are not just your public policy, they are your operational policies. For example, what kind of name-server infrastructure do you deploy in your country, and what its impact to the global internet is. So it's that kind of technical, operational policy participation that we have the mandate to participate in. And it has nothing that commits the country to something on public policy. On public policy, the queue is, we depend on the Department of Telecoms for that. And as I said, what we are doing, if I may point out, recently coming back from an ICANN meeting last week in Los Angeles, and also from the Internet Governance Forum in Istanbul last month, is that we are in the process of finalizing a paper, an internet governance paper, that we promised the soldiers within the department that we will submit to them, and we'll submit also to the ministry. It will only be an overview that says these are the internet governance issues that are currently going on and that we think the government should attend to. But we cannot be the one who go to that level and say we are speaking on behalf of South Africa. We don't have that mandate.
Thank you very much. I think for me, when it comes to .very, the entity, more is close work with the department, DG, so that we are able to provide that strategic support and direction. Because that area that I raised is a bit concerned. I think the entity is doing well, but I think more close cooperation and more support will really assist. So we'd have to see that reflected later when we go in terms of the strategy. But I think thank you very much for the work that you are doing. We are going to break for lunch. It's actually finger lunch, and then we'll resume. It's almost around 10 to 2. Is it fair that we can say we'll be back by? Will it be quick? If I say by 1:15, members. Oh, yeah. No. It's 2:15. Can we come back at 2:15? Is that fine? Thank you very much. Let's adjourn for now. Thanks. Mm-hmm.